Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast. We have seven amazing shows to dive into for our 2026 season.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer, Dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater!
Welcome back to the 2026 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples, and we are recording on site at our beautiful rehearsal facility. My name is Allison Hess, and I am the Education and Engagement Manager.
And I'm Stephanie Graham, and I am the Artistic Associate here at the Playhouse. Today, we are talking about the deeply intimate musical, The Last 5 Years. Jamie, a rising novelist, and Kathy, an aspiring actress, share a 5-year love story told from opposite perspectives. As Jamie races towards the future and Kathy reaches into the past, their timelines collide in the middle at the single moment they both cherish. Set against the energy of New York City, The Last 5 Years is a musical that captures the dizzying joy of falling in love and the quiet ache of letting go.
This beautiful contemporary musical was written by Jason Robert Brown, and we are very lucky to have the music director, Patrick Bowman, in studio with us. Hello, Patrick.
Hello.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for joining us. Our audiences would have heard your work last summer in Mary Poppins, and you have worked as a music director, musician, performer, programmer, and arranger, among other things, in theaters across the country. Recent credits include music directing and playing keyboards in Waitress with the Grand Theater, Theater Aquarius, as well as A Christmas Story at Theatre Aquarius, and then playing keyboards in Mirvish's Peter Pan, Mean Girls, and Anne Juliet. You've been busy.
Yeah, it's been great. I've been very blessed.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's great to have you back this season after last season.
Yeah. Patrick, you started your career and your training in vocal performance, which I think is such an interesting beginning to then becoming a music director. How do you find the experience as a vocal performer and that training helped you in your work as a music director?
Well, I kind of came into music theater. It kind of evolved from my previous wish to be an opera singer.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of my goal while I was at school. I was studying as a singer, as a baritone. And I just started doing some music directing on the side for fun. And I realized that that was a little bit more where my passions lied. It was a little more dynamic. So I kind of evolved into musical theater from opera and from being a singer. And now I'm mostly playing the piano and I do still teach voice, but I don't really perform much as a singer anymore. I do find I draw on that training a lot. Music direction, any direction really, is a big part of it is about communication. And so my background as a singer kind of gives me a bit of a deeper shared language with other singers. So we can talk about technique and I can sort of try to put myself in the performer's shoes in a different way. It's different with every actor. Some actors love to talk about vocal technique with the music director, and some people would just rather not go there because they have their vocal coaches that they love. But I'm thinking about it a lot. So yeah, it's really a shared language thing, I think, above anything.
And I think it's so helpful, especially for vocal health during a run too, that you have some of those skills to help people. You know, 8 shows a week is a lot.
This show in particular is like a very big sing, right? So we're still early days and feeling it out, learning the music, but we'll definitely have lots of conversations around how do we not just sound great tonight or in rehearsal today, but be able to do this 8 times a week and sometimes twice in one day. It's a very big feat for the two singers. So yeah, that's definitely on the radar.
And you also obviously have, you know, extensive background in piano. Did you start with piano? Did you start with voice?
It's funny. I've kind of bounced back and forth between them a lot. Like I started in just, it was called ORF music
A
kid. So a lot of rhythm.
Love ORF.
Group singing. But I did take piano lessons as a kid. And then I kind of kept that going, but took a lot of dance. Got into just like musical theater schools and camps. And that's when I started taking singing more seriously. Like around high school, I kind of pivoted from classical piano to voice. And then at the end of university, I started to get back more into piano. So it really has been bouncing back and forth between the two things. And for a long time, I was not the most confident piano player. I was always felt like a bit of a fraud because I was like, no, I'm a singer. I'm not a pianist. But just doing it enough now, I feel totally comfortable at the piano as much as I do singing now.
Yeah. So what was it like coming to the last 5 years? Because you say, you know, it's a big sing. It's also a big play
and a notoriously difficult score to play.
Yeah. What was that like prepping for it?
This is definitely the toughest score I played. I mean, Mary Poppins is also probably the second toughest score I've played. So thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Brian. We like to give you a challenge. Right? Welcome to Gananoque.
Yeah. But I mean, it pushes me to be a better pianist, right? So both Mary Poppins and this was a lot of prep time. Like practicing piano is one of my favorite things to do. Like a whole day can just disappear and I love doing it. So it definitely a lot of work with the metronome and just going slow. I'll play my part. I'll then sort of try to sing as best I can the part while accompanying to make sure I also know what the singers have to do.
And I think one of the really great things about the score and the, you know, the orchestration, the piano part is it doesn't just feel like an accompaniment to the voices. It's really like a duet. You know, you have your own melodies. All of these other things are happening alongside the voices. What is it like working with Tess and James in creating this piece together with them?
It's great. They know that they're up against one of the most challenging vocal scores too, right? Like any one of these numbers in isolation is a big sing. And then to do like half a dozen of them each in a row is crazy. So they know what they're coming into, but they're both expert singers and amazing, intelligent vocalists. So I'm not having to think too much about that because they just sounding great and they know their instruments. So it's really fun. We can play around, try things, throw stuff at the wall. It's been really, really satisfying. And sometimes I'll just put my head down and play and see what comes out. And other times I'll back off a little bit so I can, you know, listen more. It's been very fun.
As well as playing keyboards and music direction, you've worked extensively as a programmer and arranger as well. Can you speak to these roles a little bit?
So, I mean, arranging can be a lot of things. The context that I'm usually doing arrangement in is for musical theater scores that exist already and have been orchestrated. Typically, it's taking something written for, I don't know, say a dozen players and rearranging the parts to work for a smaller band, often just because of budget or space concerns. Maybe you can't fit all of the players in a small pit or something like that. Keyboard programming is becoming really, really like a mainstay of musical theater pit bands too, on Broadway and everywhere. It's the idea of you route your electronic keyboard through a computer, and that computer processes all the different sounds that are needed for the keyboard part. So instead of just playing piano, you're playing it like a piano, but it's coming out as accordion and guitar and clarinets and strings, often at the same time. And that moves quickly as the show goes on through time. So you need to do a fair amount of programming so that you can quickly change what sounds are coming out of the keyboard, right? Basically. It's all planned out and you use a foot pedal to just advance to the next set of sounds. So for 1 second, you're playing piano in your right hand and timpani in your left hand. And a second later, you step on the pedal and now it's strings everywhere. And you step on the pedal and it's an organ. So the programming part of that is setting it up. So it's just a pedal step.
So they would probably often work in tandem, right? You're arranging and then you're like, okay, I'm going to take these string parts and I'm going to put them into keyboard two,
yeah,
keyboard
exactly.
One. And then you program it to be able to actually physically play it.
Exactly.
But sometimes, right, they are actually, that's the keyboard two or keyboard three book. Is a programmed book in a way.
Yes, the original arrangers, the original orchestrators are making these programmed books and they just hand you the book and say, this is what you have to play. Sometimes they'll give you the programming to go with it, but a lot of the times you're left to figure it out yourself.
I'm not going to say it's a niche skill because I think more and more people are having to do it, but I feel like there's not a ton of training in that. How did you come to do it? Was it sort of like picking it up as you needed to, or did you work with someone to figure out how to do the programming and things like that?
I just kind of glommed onto the people who I knew who were really good at it.
Yeah.
So like David Atkinson is an amazing keyboard programmer. Wayne Willem, I reach out to him a lot with questions. And they're both super generous to be able to answer questions you might have. And then just YouTube rabbit holes, right? Like if you don't know how to do something, you just look it up and you'll find it eventually.
I think that's so fascinating. And I really feel like it's eye-opening for our audiences when you think about the sounds that you hear in a pit band, especially, you know, something like Mary Poppins, for example, that I think is originally built to have quite a large orchestra, and to think about where those sounds are actually coming from is really eye-opening.
And I think for Patrick, you can speak to this, but if we don't have a flute, let's say, you get to decide as the arranger, all right, which instrument, if that flute sound was really important, but we don't have that player, what other instrument could pick up that flute line? I think it's always fascinating what arrangers choose that instrumentation to be.
Yeah, for last 5 years, for example, it's written for six and we have five. So it's written for two cellos and we just have one. So I'll kind of go through the score and just see where the holes are, which is anytime both cellos are playing at the same time, there's now missing information. So yeah, it could go into any of the other instruments, or you sometimes have to decide what to leave out if everything can't be covered. In terms of keyboard programming, there's lots of different ways people approach it. Some people will just throw all of the missing information into a keyboard part and then program the book to be played that way. I think personally, there's a lot of instruments that don't sound very good coming out of the keyboard unless you spend a lot of money for like really high quality patches. So I like to like put pitched percussion, keyboards, organs, accordion, that sort of stuff into the keyboard books. But clarinets, flutes, brass, strings, depending on the show, sometimes cheesy synth strings are great.
Love cheesy synth strings sometimes.
Yes. For the last 5 years, no. Don't want that. So that I would rather find another way to do it, like an actual instrument instead of a synthesized instrument.
What is the makeup of the band for last 5 years? You say you have five instruments, including a cello.
Yes. So there's piano that I'll be playing, and then steel string guitar, acoustic guitar, electric bass, violin, and cello.
And for that missing cello, are you doing any programming for that, or will that be split in between some of the other instruments as needed? Like, are you doing any programming for this show?
No keyboard programming for this one. Maybe just a touch, but it's kind of already in the book. Right. Like, there's a little bit of celesta, like a little music boxy sort of sound, right? But no, I've just tried to redistribute the cello line to the other players. Most of the time for this, it's deciding what to leave out, because it's a really full score for everybody. It's very busy, so people aren't usually available to play the missing cello book. They're doing their own thing already.
I think what's beautiful about this score, too, is that there's not a percussionist. The keyboard sort of acts as our percussion in a way.
I would say collectively, the rhythm appears. Like, it is a lot in the piano, but it's also in the guitar and the strings, the bass for sure, and the singers, too. Sometimes, like, it's a very groovy show, right? You settle into a beat, and all the different rhythms coming from everybody make up the groove. And so you're absolutely right. It's very unusual that a groove-based show would have no drums. But it's exciting.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that makes it really special.
It's very unique, yeah.
Yeah, are you excited about playing in the Fire Hall? It's a space that we don't typically do musicals in. So it's a very unique situation and a unique show to do in that space.
Yeah, I'm very excited. It'll be nice to be like part of the action. I know for Mary Poppins, like we were on a different story. We're in the basement and they, you know, pipe the sound in, and it's all through cameras that way. Like, so now to be able to sit in the same room as the audience in this.
Because you're going to be on stage, right?
Yeah, we're like kind of up on a platform. Should be fun.
That'll be so great for our audiences.
Yeah.
You have an apprentice musical director with you on this show, sponsored by the TD Ready Commitment. Can you want to talk about the relationship with your apprentice and how's that going?
It's great. Like, Lisa Lorio is amazing. She's like a workhorse. She's so reliable and she's so great to be around. Like, she's just so smart and so friendly, so positive. So it's been so helpful to have her in the room. It's going to be extra helpful once we go into the theater, because now we have two sets of ears, so she can go out and listen to how things are sounding while I play, or vice versa. And it also just lets us do music in two different places at once. So tomorrow morning, I'll be rehearsing with the band while Lisa is rehearsing with the singers. She has so many insights all the time, and we love just whispering in the corner and nerding out about the music. It's been so great.
That's so nice, too, because I think so often as musical directors, you don't have an assistant. Or, like, you know, directors and choreographers, sometimes we have assistants, so you can, like you said, nerd out together. But it's so nice that you do have one.
You were saying, you know, she can go out into the audience and listen while you play. And I know that is a common thing where a music director will also be like the band leader and or play like keyboards. Do you find when you work as music director, you also are playing in the band as well? Or do you do a lot of conducting?
I've never left a run and had somebody else conduct it,
right,
as like the main band leader. Very rarely do I get to do shows with the full orchestration with all of the players. So usually what happens is somebody says, here's the budget for the band. You can have this many players. And then I can say, okay, so there's budget for 8 players. But if I play piano, then there's budget for 9 players, right? So if I choose to just conduct with the stick, then there's one less player in the band.
Right.
Even on a busy show like Mary Poppins last year, like it made more sense to play the book so it can sound fuller.
I don't even remember the last time a full orchestra played on a show in the country.
Like, I don't even know what's happening on Broadway. I think a lot of those are being re-orchestrated for smaller groups. It's just the way things are going.
Unlike choreographers and directors who typically leave a production after the show opens, musical directors stay with the production. How does your role as a music director shift after the show opens?
The only time that I've not stayed after opening was for Million Dollar Quartet, which is a show about Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash, and other musicians also that were in the room that day. So obviously when those are the characters, they play the instruments. So the music director's role there was just during rehearsal, and then I said bye on opening night, and it was really weird.
I bet.
And it was even weirder to come back 3 weeks later to see the show, and it was such a unique experience. Typically, yeah, you'll stay and conduct the show, which a big part of that is making sure it stays consistent. So it's the same for every audience every night. It's also adapting to what the audience is offering you and what the little differences and what the actors might do on a night-to-night basis. There needs to be a bit of room for things to breathe and adjust. And then occasionally, maybe every week or so, there'll be some maintenance notes to make sure the original vision is still preserved.
We've already talked about what a big thing this show is. Do you feel like there'll be adjustments as we move through to maintain this in the way that we kind of set it so that it's more sustainable? Is that an element of it at all?
We do talk about finding ease in the score whenever possible. Like, these songs as standalone songs are 11 o'clock numbers, right? But you don't need 12, 11 o'clock numbers in a row. Nobody's actually interested in that. It's too tiring as an audience member, and you just set a new standard and then you have to work so hard to maintain that energy. So we do talk about singing easy whenever possible because...
Yeah, finding that highs and lows and what is maintainable on those 8 shows a week, and then let it rip when it needs to rip.
Yeah.
How have you found working with Brett as director? Because I feel like the show being sung through, there's so much collaboration between the music and the story. And so how has that been working with Brett? And do you find it's different than working on, you know, a show that's more like, okay, song, scene, song, scene?
Well, compared to Mary Poppins last year, very different.
Yeah. I mean, most of the text in the show is lyrics. Right? I mean, there's no rules about how the relationship normally works, but Brett's such an intelligent director, and he loves to go deep into the motivation. And so it's really fun to sort of hear how he's imagining the emotional state of a character or the objectives of a character, and then try to look for clues in the score that support that. And so that we kind of try to come at things from a pure text standpoint and also from a vocal and musical standpoint. And it's just really about trying to marry those two things together.
And I think too, the score offers clues. There are moments of like just instrumentation that sometimes in this score are a response, or they're indicating what's happening like tension wise, even though the characters aren't necessarily speaking or singing lyrics, the orchestra has something to say about that moment. And I think that's, again, a really beautiful thing about the score.
Yeah, I don't remember where I picked this idea up. It wasn't mine. It came from somebody. But just the idea that like the score is an auditory manifestation of what's going on in the characters and in the action. So anytime there's something that pops out of the score, I think it really should be coming from a character's thought or a change in the circumstance. So that's the really fun bit of detective work to do.
And I think we've talked a lot about the nitty-gritty of vocal technique and the score and the challenging nature of it. But I think something that can't be lost in it is also the heart that is contained within the show and within the music. What has that been like?
I mean, the songs go deep, right? Like they're emotional songs, and there's always tears in the rehearsal room. Tears and crying is not conducive to difficult singing either.
No, your throat senses up when you're crying.
Yeah, you can't really do it. I mean, I remember back to when I was singing more, I would often find you kind of have to go there once or twice to find that limit. And then once you've kind of got the emotional breakdown part out, then it often takes more for it to sneak up on you.
And then you can find your way back to like, I can still sing this at the same time, but carry the emotion. And
yeah, the emotional highs and lows of the show are really exciting. Also, the musical shifts in the show are really satisfying to play. Like something can feel so deep and sentimental, and then a second later, it's so flashy. And I find it energizing. Like I don't feel exhausted at the end of the day. I feel like, oh, that was fun. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah, that's a great way to be in rehearsal. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Ask me next week. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited for our audiences to experience this show. I think it's going to be something really, really special. And I think we mentioned it off the top, but like such an intimate space for it too. So I think it's going to be...
I mean, it's the perfect space for this piece.
I agree.
So how has your time been in Gananoque so far, Patrick? Have you been into any spots or seen any spots that you're looking forward to checking out?
I love coming here in the summer. Like, it's what a great place to spend July and August. It's the best. What are my favorite spots? I haven't been there yet this year because it's been a bit of a whirlwind getting started, but I'm excited to go to Panache for breakfast sandwich. I'm very excited to have a pint and a pizza on the Purple House little balcony.
It's one of my faves for sure.
Yeah, those are the first two on my list when I have a free night, I think.
That's great. Thank you so much. It's so fascinating. I love doing deep dives into like music and the way that it affects us because it does. But I don't think we always think about the specifics of why and how. And I'm very excited for this show. And thank you so much for coming and talking with us.
Yeah, thanks. This was great.
Yeah. And thank you to Matt McDonald for recording our Playhouse podcast today. And a special thank you to Mark Hunt for composing the theme music for the Thousand Islands Playhouse podcast.
For more information and to book your tickets, visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com.
See you at the theater.